Blog Talk Radio.
Folks, we are excited to announce the latest show on Contending for Truth Radio, the Conover Component. We're going to talk a little bit of politics. We're going to talk a little bit current events. We're going to have a great time. And with no further ado, we're going to pass it over to Rodney Lee Conover. Rodney, take it away.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, my friend.
Man, it's great to be back on the air with you, isn't it?
You know what? It always is. It always is. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun. I think this is going to be a great show. I think we're going to accomplish some things. I know we got some really, really good people listening right now that appreciate both you and I and hard work because they are hard workers as well.
Well, we were talking this morning about what we're going to call the show and what we're going to do on the show and what we're going to try and accomplish. And I said to you, well, what's our goal here? And I think we both agreed that the goal is to try and educate people as to how to educate other people. Am I saying that about right?
You know, I think you are. I think that's I think it's the piece that's missing in politics right now. I think it's the big piece that's missing. You know, we all know where we stand. We all stand on basic principles. We stand for firm beliefs, but we got a bunch of people running around this country that have no clue as to what's going on. They don't know what's going on in Washington, D.C. They don't know what's going on in their state houses. They don't even know what's going on in their schools. And I think it's time to wake them up, and I think that's what we're going to do. We're going to teach people how to wake people up. We're going to teach people how to convey how they feel and why. I've said for a long time on Blog Talk Radio, it's time to quit telling people what we believe and start telling them why we believe it. Because I believe when we do, we can save this great nation.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of people out there, and you talk to them, and it's kind of confusing a lot of times. You talk to somebody, and you get their background, you get their fundamental philosophy on life, and you see that they have a family, you see that they have a business, and you see that they essentially believe in most of the things that you believe in, and yet they're voting for the other party, or they're voting for Republican establishment, which you and I don't really believe in wholeheartedly. And you just shake your head and you go, now, wait a minute. You got a family. You remember the NRA. You have a business. You're a small businessman. You got employees. And yet you're voting Democrat, and you just sort of, what are you doing? You know, you can't figure it out. And you're running around, and you're going, WTF? I mean, you're driving me nuts over here. And then it comes back down to, Scott, choosing the right articulation to, for lack of a better word, to sell a conservative ideal to people. And I'm not talking about laying down a bunch of rules for everybody. I don't do that. But just a fundamental, hey, conservatism is the history of what works. Over the last, I don't know, since the cavemen, I guess. But more recently, let's say in the past, 300 years or so, we've been trying stuff. It is the history of the human experience, the trial and error of what works and what doesn't work in the short run, but mostly in the long run. You try something, doesn't work out. You try something else, doesn't work out. You try a couple of other things. One works better than others in the long run. You say, hey, from now on, we're doing it that way. Now, you tweak it over time, but that's the history of what works, and that's what conservatism is. It comes down to that. And over a long period of time, these ideals become time-tested. And then we did this grand experiment 250 years ago or so, came over from England to the United States, to what would become the United States. Why? Primarily because there was a monarchy, there was a king over there in England that was ruling with an iron fist. It was ruling the people without representation. Basically, it was an imperialist king who was telling everybody what to do all the time, taxing them, and doing whatever the heck he wanted to do. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like anything that's going on today, Scott?
It sounds exactly like what's going on today. And we know that history repeats itself.
And who were those people that came over from England and were sick and tired of being ruled over? They were conservatives. Now, I'm not saying that they were without fault. I'm not saying they're perfect, but they were conservatives. They came over, and they settled the land. And, you know, you can have arguments about how they did it or why, you know, who and this and where. But you know what? They created a nation that in a very, very short amount of time, a couple of hundred years, not even that, 150 years, became the greatest nation on earth, became the most productive nation on earth, became a beacon to freedom to people all over the world. People looked at the United States and they said, wow, I'm going there. In fact, I'm going there the first chance I get. It's the only place you can go and do your own thing. Listen, Scott, I've been all over the world. I've been all over the world doing comedy. I've been all over the world making bad television shows. I've been all over the world talking politics and economics and entertainment to people. And it's the same thing. It's without exception. You talk to people, especially young people, and you know what they say? They say, you know what? They find out you're an American, and they go, you know what? I'm going to America. I'm going to be there. As soon as I can talk my girlfriend to it, as soon as I can save up enough money, as soon as I can finish high school, as soon as I can whatever, I'm going to America, without exception. And then you hear, I don't get it, Scott. We got all these people in this country that hate America. So many of them. I don't get it. How many times, Scott, have you heard America is a racist country? How many times have you heard that over the last 25 years?
I'll give you my little niece's answer. I can't count that high.
Yeah. And yet, who are the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people trying to get into this country? White people? Well, yeah, a few. But the lion's share of them are brown and black people trying to get there. Why would they come here if it's a racist country? The fact is, it's not a racist country. There are racial elements in this country, just like there are everywhere. Oh, yeah, we should be more like Canada. Forget about it. I've spent plenty of time in Canada. They're not all inclusive and all benevolent and these wonderful non-racist people. They're just like anybody. We should be more like Sweden. You go over to Sweden sometime and see if you find any black people. There aren't any. They're a bunch of Swedes. They do everything they can to keep it absolutely pure over there. Bless their hearts. They got every right to. I don't care. I'm just saying. You got a bunch of numbnuts over here in this country. They got it made. You're walking around with more freedom than you've ever dreamed about. And you're pissing and moaning all the time. Ah, the racist country, it's no good. I just don't get that, Scott. It's the self-loathing just absolutely drives me insane. I was
Well, you know what? It does me too. Does me too.
I
haven't been all over the world, but I've been a few places. And I'll tell you, I felt the same thing in Grenada and Trinidad. Those people were dying to come here. And, you know, they didn't want to come here to feed off of us. They wanted to come here to live the American dream. And, you know, we've got two really good illustrations, and you brought up one, and I'm going to bring up the other. We've got the Pilgrims and the Strangers in 1620, and we've got the Cubans that swim across and literally sometimes are swimming on milk cartons across 90 miles of shark-infested waters just so that they can, if they can stand up on dry land, they can be here. They're risking their lives. Those Pilgrims did the exact same thing. They got on that rickety old boat where they were going out into the middle of nowhere. It wasn't like a bunch of people that had been taking cruises every 6 months on Carnival Cruise Lines or Norwegian. These people had never been on a boat. They piled a bunch of food on there that they knew wasn't going to last very long. They weren't going to have enough water. They put themselves into misery to get away from where they were at and to get someplace where they could be free. That's what the Cubans are doing today. To what? Come to a racist, crappy country? No, Ronnie, I think you're exactly right. I think you've got it pegged exactly right.
You know, I'm surprised, Scott, that in the Olympics, Cuba does not dominate the swimming events. Do you ever think about that? Because that comes to my mind. But
I agree.
You know,
they could put sharks in the water, and they'd still win.
Yeah, you would think so. I was down in a meeting in Orange County, and I met this woman. She was probably 42 years old, maybe 38, early 40s. Tall, elegant, very well-dressed, broken English, but, you know, decent English, but clearly not her first language. She was from somewhere in Eastern Europe, one of these Tajikistan, you know, one of these fan countries. And she was just the happiest person I've ever met, and I just was kind of drawn to her, and I got into a conversation with her. And I got to talking to her, and I got a few drinks in her, because I wanted her to start really laying it on me. You know, I wanted to really I wanted to start asking her questions about her background. I wanted her to open up to me. Is what I wanted. And she gets a couple glasses of wine down, and she starts talking, Scott. And she starts talking about Americans. And it was hysterical. It turns out she came over without a pot to pee in, as my dad used to say, when the Soviet Union broke up and she was finally able to get to America. And she started selling real estate. 10 years later, she owns her own real estate company, and she sells it for millions of dollars. She takes off, and she cruises around the world for 4 or 5 years, comes back, and starts a jewelry company. And now she's got this gigantic wholesale jewelry company. She runs it all herself. She's not married. She's having a time of her life, and she is sitting there joking about Americans, saying, I don't understand Americans, how easy they have it. She said, I got here, I didn't speak the language. I didn't think I was going to be able to do it. She said, but once I started, I was just incredulous that the people around me that were born here weren't doing the same thing. It's right here for everybody, and half of the Americans are sitting around pissing and moaning that they can't get a job. It's insane. To her, it was insanity. And she wasn't saying it in anger. She was saying it, she was bewildered why it wasn't happening. She was looking to me to maybe tell her why that was. And I said, I don't know, because I haven't had that many jobs in my life. I've always had my own business. I have a theory, Scott, about people who have their own business or that start their own business. You know, you see people
that, you know, have had their own small business and they, you know, they're successful or they're kind of successful, they're real successful, maybe they start a chain, whatever happens to them. And people tend to say, well, boy, those are entrepreneurs. They really are the risk takers, you know. Those guys, oh, those guys and gals that do that, they're the risk takers. They just have the balls to get out there and do it. See, I don't believe that, Scott. I just don't believe it. I think people that start their own business do so because they just don't like being told what to do. I really believe it.
Amen.
I think it's just people who cannot hold down a job because being told what to do drives them insane. I'm one of them, Scott. Even if somebody tells me what to do and I know it's for my own good, I can't take it. So and my dad was the same way. My dad got drummed out of the Air Force because he loved flying. My dad loved being in the Air Force because he got to fly. But he got drummed out because he couldn't be told what to do. And he never had a job. He started his own business right away because, you know, people got a job. People tell you what to do. And so back to this lady in Orange County. I can't remember her name. She had one of those, you know, weird Ukrainian or Russian names, but it was beautiful in its own way. And I always think of her. Whenever I hear somebody complaining, Scott, I always think about her, how happy she was. And, you know, here's another thing, Scott, and this might piss some people off, but guess what? I don't care. She was really, really proud to be a female. Do you know what I mean? She had no absolute. She would way rather be a female than a male. She had no qualms about, you know, maybe having a, maybe, you know, things were unfair because she was a woman. There was none of that. I mean, if anything, she saw the clear advantages she had in being a woman and how she found it delightful to be a woman. And it was so refreshing. And she, and believe me, Scott, she was this, you can tell just talking to her, this was not a person that was going to put up with any crap. As nice as she was and as delightful a person she was to talk to, and she was engaging and obviously, a go-getter, you could tell that she was not a person that was going to put up with any crap from anybody. I just look at that and I go, why would anybody go out in life in America and think for a minute that you have a disadvantage? I mean, it used to be if you were handicapped, it was terrible. You couldn't get a job. You'd have to, you know, you'd have to live at home and have your family take care of you. And that, you know, it's not so anymore in America. People in wheelchairs can take care of themselves and have jobs. And, you know, with the advent of technology and the computer and advanced this and advanced that, I mean, it's great. I know people that are missing three limbs, and they do just fine. Now, I'm not being cavalier about being handicapped. I'm just saying that to illustrate, to make some sort of illustration that in today's world in America, let me tell you, it is just, the bottom line is put your head down and work hard, and it all comes to you. And this idea that, oh, it's a bad economy. Let me tell you what happens in a bad economy. You start your own business. That's what you do. You invent a job. You invent a niche. You invent something to do. Now, I wish the economy wasn't as bad as it is, and it doesn't have to be this bad. But, Scott, recession is good for the economy, not this recession. This is too much, too long, and the administration and the enabling Congress is not doing anything to help. Everything they're doing hurts and prolongs this recession. A recession is natural in an economy, and it's good for the economy. It's good for business. Why do I say that? Because recession teaches a business what they don't need. It teaches a business where they should be cutting the fat, product lines that they should drop, services that they really don't need to be offering. It makes them lean and mean and competitive, and we have to compete against the rest of the world. So recession's good because you come out of the recession twice as strong, and companies that shouldn't be in business go out of business. And you say, oh, it's terrible, people lose their jobs. Yeah, people do lose their jobs. But you know what? They find other ones, or they start their own business, or they get some more education and some more training. This BS that, oh, you just go on unemployment for the rest of your life, that's crapola, and I hate this. Oh, we're going to extend unemployment benefits for another year. You know what that means, Scott? That means people go on unemployment for another year.
That's right. Exactly.
You're just prolonging the misery. Anyway, Scott, why do you constantly let me go off on these tangents, and I can't even remember what we were talking about?
Because I like listening to you talk. You know what, Rodney, you make some very important points, though. I've said for a long, long time, I hate giving away my age sometimes because I feel like I'm starting to get old, but I've said for a couple of decades now, if you give a man a lawnmower and let him wander around the neighborhood for a few days, in about 2 years he can own his own landscaping business. If you give a man a paintbrush and a paint can, teach him some basic painting skills, let him wander around with that thing for a little bit, in a couple of years, he can have him a good little painting job going. I had a friend in when I first came back from Trinidad and Grenada to California, and I had spent time that a few years before that in Southern California. And I had seen this thing they had in Beverly Hills. This guy, he had a water tank on the back of his truck, his pickup, and he drove that around and he went into the homes of the people in Beverly Hills and washed their cars. And I'd never really ever seen one after that. So I got it. I had a friend there in Porterville where I moved to, and I told him, I said, you know, because he detailed cars. I said, here's what you do. You've got a little bit of capital in your pocket. Get you a pickup. Get one of these big water tanks, and you start heading around and start picking up business. Start picking up clients. I said, it might take you a few days to pick up a few clients, but you're good at what you do. You can charge a whole lot more per hour by working for yourself than you can ever get out of somebody paying you, and within a couple of years, you can have a real good business going. And he says, nah, never work. And I'm going to tell you, no kidding, Rodney, a year later in the Porterville Recorder, there was a full-page article about this guy that was making $120,000 with one of these trucks with a big water tank in the back of it running around going to people's homes and detailing their cars. And that's what you're talking about, Rodney. This is this country, we've got freedoms like nobody believes. You know, you started talking out a while ago about England in the 1600s and the environment that the people lived in over there. If you were poor, you stayed poor. If you were the king, you stayed the king. And there was no moving back and forth. That's one of the reasons why the pilgrims, that's one of the reasons why those explorers, the strangers, got on that boat and came over here so they could get out of that system. Benjamin Franklin knocked heads right on level onto that system. He was successful, but when he went over to England, they had no respect for him. But we've got, even in our economy the way it is right now, even with the situation the way that some things are right now, man has still got in the United States the ability to get out and make anything of himself if he just believes he can. My grandmother told me when I was a little kid, she said, Scott, you can do anything you set your mind to. And boy, was she right. And, I didn't get to finish college. But, boy, I've done everything that I could imagine wanting to do. By the time I was 30, I'd done everything that anybody could imagine. I'd got to have my own business. I'd got to see a lot of the United States because of this great country. Get a can of paint. Get you some stencils. And go door to door and charge people $5 to repaint their number on the curb. I guarantee you, you can make more than what you're going to make minimum wage working at McDonald's by the time your week's done, but you just got to go knock on some doors. There are opportunity after opportunity after opportunity out there to do exactly what you're talking about, Rodney. And, you know, I watched something today that was very humbling. I'm not sure if you've ever watched the MAFA 21 movie about the history of Planned Parenthood and eugenics. I'd kind of seen it before. I'd watched it online, but I was multitasking at the time. But a good friend of mine here in Texas, Sammy Walker, gave me a copy of the DVD. And so Sid and I sat down to watch it today. And there was a woman who was very nicely dressed, a classy looking lady. And she was young, when she was 13 years old, she'd been sterilized. And she'd been sterilized because she had already had a child. She had been raped. And the reason why the state sterilized her is they said she would never amount to anything and her kid would never amount to anything. The kid now owns his own real estate company and his own construction company and his own. He's the CEO of his own technology company. And this woman who never graduated high school has got a college degree. This is the land of opportunity. It's still the land of opportunity. That's why, Rodney, and I'll say this and I'll throw it back to you. I'll tell you the one thing about that presidential election, not this time, but 6 years ago, made me more angry at John McCain than anything, and I've been saying it, and if I ever have a chance to say it to his face, I'll say it to his face, was when Barack Obama stood up there on stage and he talked about change. Why did John McCain not turn around, look him straight in the eye, and say, change what? This is the greatest country that's ever been on the face of the earth, the history of the earth. We got a better standing, we got a better standard of living right now in this country than man has ever had in the history of man. And in any other country in the world, we're living, our poorest of poor in this country are in the top 10% of wealth of the world. We've got unprecedented freedom. Yet people want to hate on us. People want to hate on us. And that's what I don't understand, Rodney. I'll pass it back to you.
You were in Trinidad, you said, and where else?
In Trinidad and Grenada. And Trinidad is the first island off of South America. And then Grenada is a couple of islands up. And I'll tell you, I liked Trinidad, but I loved Grenada. Wonderful place, wonderful people. Folks, if you're getting an urge to go see Hawaii, forget it. Get on a plane and go down to Grenada.
The reason I make mention of that, Scott, is because you said that you were very fortunate. You got to do everything in life, and I know that you were down there dealing arms, and it's just kind of one more thing that you got to do in life. And I don't know. I wouldn't put that in the fortunate category. I wouldn't be talking about that in public if I were you. But listen, you got to do everything. That was all. I know you got some news stories there, Scott, and I want you to grab them. And there's some great stories in the news. And I was thinking about just starting out the show today, after we did a little ranting about the anti-Americanism that is just. Nobody, I just can't understand it. I really can't. And especially out here in California. I get a lot of this, you know, it's not cool to be patriotic. Listen, I don't walk around with an American flag in my hand all the time, and I don't, you know, there's a lot of, you know, Lee Greenwood music that I really don't like. I'm not patriotic in that sense. But in every other sense, I'm very patriotic. I'm very thankful that I live here. Maybe it's because I've traveled to so many places. I mean, maybe everybody should have to do that. You know, let me tell you another thing about traveling, Scott. You know why the primary reason, that America is really, really great is because our stuff all works, you know?
That's right.
You know what I mean? You go to another country, and all of a sudden, I don't care if it's a nice country. You go there, and all of a sudden, you realize nothing works. And if you go to a second-rate country, go down to Mexico and stay in the finest tourist hotel in Cancun. Nothing works.
Exactly.
If you can get a telephone or a door lock or a taxi or something, if you can get things to work, it's a miracle. I mean, it's ridiculous. And you get back home and you're like, the toilet flushes, the ceiling fan works, you know, your computer works. It's just every little thing that you take for granted in America, trust me, go over to Europe and see if you can get your crap to work, because half the time it doesn't. Anyway, I don't know what I was talking about. First you were dealing arms in Nicaragua or somewhere, And then I started talking about that. Oh, yeah, the news. Listen, there's a great story out today. Hillary, somebody threw a shoe at Hillary, and all I could think of was that Joe Biden, he really needs to get some help, don't you think?
I know it. And you know what? I'm looking at this picture on the CBS Las Vegas, and I don't know what she's doing. I'm going to have to send you this link. The only problem with Blog Talk Radio is we can't show video. But you've got to see this picture. I mean, I've said for a long time, Rodney, and I know a lot of people disagree with me, I don't think she's planning on running for president. And I'll tell you why. Because she has allowed her to be taken pictures of over the last 5 or 6 years, some of the most hideous pictures you've ever seen in your life. And this is the worst. She looks like she's playing the hunchback from Notre Dame is getting ready to become Boris Karloff for something. But she's standing on the stage. They throw this shoe at her in Vegas. And, you know, when you get hauled off in Vegas, what does that say, Rodney?
I know. It's like, and what's with this shoe? Remember a guy threw a shoe at Bush? And now somebody threw a shoe at Hillary. It's like, it's the only thing, logical thing that you can smuggle in is what you're wearing on your feet, I guess. But I wonder if, the terrorists are going to start wearing really dangerous shoes or something, you know, like that shoe bomber or something. But I thought it was interesting reading the story. I guess it was a woman, walked up, you know, started approaching the stage, and just almost like she was frustrated and didn't know what to do. And so just threw a shoe at her. I'm just thinking of the mindset of somebody where you just walk up and you just want to scream at somebody and you're just like, ah, screw it. I'm going to throw my shoe at her. You know, what? I don't know why I think that's so funny, but I do. She chose to, and how was she going to get home? Like hop home on one foot? You have to think ahead, folks, when you're going to throw something at Hillary. Don't throw anything at Hillary. I'm not advocating throwing anything at her, but I just think it's odd that someone would throw a shoe at Hillary Clinton. I bet they don't cover it like they covered the shoe incident. What happened to that guy that threw a shoe at George Bush? Because this woman got taken away.
Oh, yeah, she got taken away. And you know what? George Bush, that happened over in a foreign country, so that man might not even be alive anymore. But I'll tell you, here's what I'm wondering also. You know, this incident happened. She was on stage at an Institute of Scrap Recycling Industries meeting. What is an Institute of Scrap Recycling Industries?
Maybe they were preparing a new pantsuit for her. I don't know. I have no idea why she was. There's another article that I found. I found very interesting. Let me find it here. It is a report about Rupert Murdoch. They interviewed him. Let me see here real quick. CNN. That was it. CNN did a long interview of Rupert Murdoch. Of course, Rupert Murdoch is the guy that owns Fox, and he's widely just hated by any Democrat, any liberal, anybody on the left. Well, you mentioned Rupert Murdoch, and they just go nuts. You know, they just go crazy. It just drives people insane. Rupert Murdoch is quoted as saying, well, I want to get the quote exactly correct, so let me look it up here. He's quoted as saying, quote, "I could live with Hillary as president." Now, a lot of conservatives and Republicans, Scott, are not going to like the fact that he said that. "I could live with Hillary as president," says Rupert Murdoch. But don't get too upset by Rupert Murdoch saying that, Scott, because I think what he's saying is that he would like to be president. I could live with Hillary as president. Or he could be, he wants to be first lady. I don't know. I think there's a comma missing or something. I just think Rupert Murdoch wants to be in the White House. I really do. But I don't think people realize that Rupert Murdoch is a businessman. And he's looking at this like, hey, you know what, she might be president. I got to play ball. I got a media empire to look after. Am I right?
You are exactly right.
I mean, it's
not
like
Fox. Because if I had Rupert Murdoch's money, I would have retired by now. I wouldn't be worrying about business.
I tell you what, I know what we would do, and this is your idea, but I'm going to steal it. If we had Rupert Murdoch's money, we would go on tour in the United States, and we would go on tour to big baseball and football stadiums around the country, and we would book a bunch of stadiums like we were a couple of rock stars. We'd do a stadium tour, and when we got there, we would buy millions of dollars worth of hamburgers and hot dogs, and we would give them away. We would just put a big sign, and it said, free hot dogs and hamburgers today only. And we put them in front of the stadium. Am I right? Millions. And
you got
we
it.
We'd pack these stadiums full of people that are hungry. Just come on in. And if they need a ride, we'd find them a ride or get a shuttle or something. But with free food, you kidding me? People would be showing up. And we'd pack these stadiums, and we'd feed them hot dogs and hamburgers, and then we'd have a kick-ass lineup of speakers headlined by yours truly. And we'd have these speakers, and when people are done eating, Scott, we'd talk to them. And we would just tell them, just like we were talking,
right.
Just like we're talking right now. We would just, and we don't care who they are. I mean, if they're that hungry, show up for a free hot dog, they're probably somewhat downtrodden and maybe even on welfare or maybe not doing that great and, you know, maybe looking for a little guidance. Maybe they have a mindset that could use a little conservative injection. And that's what we would do. Am I right?
You are exactly right. Exactly right. And they'd listen to us, and then you know what would happen? The IRS would be on top of us. The EPA would be saying something about we were making too many farts. And every other government agency would try and figure out a way to get us to quit giving away our free food.
Yeah, well, the IRS is on top of some of us already, so let's not encourage that, okay?
I know.
What do you got in the news there?
You know what? There's a couple of big things, but I just found this on, and this kind of is in your part of the country, in West Hollywood in the L.A. area. Sheriff admits to mistakenly killing a TV producer in West Hollywood. An up-and-coming TV producer named John Winkler. Don't know if he's any relation. Do you know John Winkler?
I was just hoping you would say Baldwin. I thought that would be in the story.
No, he had gone to a neighbor's apartment, and they thought that he was there was another man, I guess, holding people hostage, and they thought he was him, and they deputies shot and killed him. And so I guess that's what's going on your part of the country over there. And,
well,
you know, I think that happens often too much.
That's what happens when you make really bad television shows. Eventually people, they just don't put up with it anymore, and they shoot you. You got to – listen, once in a while you got to make a quality product or someone's just going to shoot you. You know, I've been reading a lot about this Rob Lowe. Remember Rob Lowe? He was a member of the Rat Pack all the way back then, Rob Lowe. Remember him, good-looking guy?
He's still around?
Oh, you kidding me? He's a total libertarian, this Rob Lowe. He's on O'Reilly once in a while, and he makes all kinds of waves. Of course, he's, you know, rich and famous. He was on the West Wing for the longest time.
Right.
He's a total conservative, and he's always coming out and really pissing off people on the left. And, of course, he's in Hollywood. You know, he's in the entertainment business, and he's very high profile, good-looking guy. And he got in a little trouble, I think it was 25 or 30 years ago, but I'm not going to talk about that because when you're young, Scott, you do stuff.
And try to
forgive people. I'm going to institute a new rule, by the way, Scott. I'm going to institute a brand new rule, and that is everything that you do more than 15 years ago, as long as it's not, you know, something horrific like, you know, serial murder or something, you get a pass. No more going back. No more going back 30 years. That is not fair because you don't know when you're young, do you?
You sure don't. boy, if I had to stack up all the dumb things I did in my 20s, especially in my 20s, I look back at that person, and that's not even closest to who I am today. And even in my 30s, did some dumb things. But you know what? That's man. That's why we start as babies, have parents to help us grow up, and we go through our 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s. So by the time we hit our 60s and 70s, we've learned a lot in life, you know? So I like your rule. Let's put that right on the wall and put a stamp on it.
When I was a kid, my dad and my uncle, they knew the police chief really well in my hometown. They were all buddies. And my dad and my uncle, they didn't run afoul of the law or anything. They were, you know, they were straight shooters. They were, you know, law-abiding citizens. They were upright and good people. But let me tell you, if some law enforcement entity in Wisconsin or you know, some sort of county guy or what, if they overstep their bounds constitutionally, my dad and my uncle would go nuts. I mean, they would stand up for their constitutional rights. They would go way overboard. It was embarrassing. But they believed in it really strongly. I mean, if they got pulled over and there wasn't probable cause, my uncle would go berserk. I mean, he would mouth off. I always thought they were gonna throw him on the ground and crack his skull open, but they never did. And they just really, really didn't like it when authorities acted unconstitutionally toward the citizenry. And I didn't understand it when I was young. I always thought, hey, man, you know, you got to respect law enforcement because it's a tough job. And the fact is, my dad and my uncle, they did respect them. You know, when there was something lawful, there was no one more respectful and nicer to the police. And there was nobody that volunteered more time to, you know, Kiwanis Pancake Day, which benefited police, you know, law enforcement in my hometown. And they, you know, on the other side of it, they were very respectful and very supportive. But, you know, it rubbed off on me, Scott. And when I was young, I started, I guess it was part rebelling and part just kind of what I knew. But I started, like, when these random stops that they have, for instance, what do they call them, DUI checks, or they call them drunk stops, or where they just checkpoints. I mean, imagine that. It sounds like Czechoslovakia in 1939, you know, checkpoints. And they pull everybody over, and ostensibly it's to catch drunk drivers. And, of course, everybody's against drunk driving. Who wouldn't be against that? Everybody is. But that doesn't mean that law enforcement gets to just pull everybody over. I'm sorry. You can't do that. And when I pull up to a checkpoint where they're just pulling everybody over, I roll my window down a little bit. I'm talking about when I was young. I roll my window down a little bit and I'd say, you know, dot, 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 roll your window down and, you know, have you been drinking? Whatever they say, I just say, I don't want to answer any questions this evening, sir. I just want to, unless you're detaining me or arresting me, I'd like to keep going. I'd like to move on. Now, let me tell you, Scott, that doesn't sit well with law enforcement at all. Sometimes it's bad, and sometimes it's real bad, but it's never good. No one ever says, okay, citizen, move right along. I see that you understand your constitutional rights. Go right ahead. That never happens, okay? And one time, I went too far. And they pulled me out. They did things that they shouldn't have done. They threw me in, you know, they threw me in a jail. And it was bad news. Now, I was arrested. Of course, I wasn't. Of course, I wasn't convicted of any crime. There was no crime, no evidence at all. I certainly wasn't drinking, and I certainly wasn't drinking and driving.
But that's not the point, Scott. The point is, it's something that happened 20, I don't even know what it was, over 20 years ago. I don't think I should be held accountable for that. Do you?
Nope. No, I don't think you should.
But it's something that would come up. Now, I'm very proud of it, actually. And if it happened, now, you know, I'm an old man now, and I don't do stuff like that anymore because it's just not worth it. But people say what? They go, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, you don't have anything to worry about. Oh, really? I don't have anything to worry about? How about 2012 when the government sicked the IRS on us and threw an election? Because, see, Scott, if you give up a little bit of your rights, that opens the door to all of your rights. And that's a fact.
Amen.
And we are seeing that. We are living that. There is a woman right now, Lois Lerner, who should be in prison for the rest of her life. Or
that's right.
She should be given immunity, and she should be telling the truth about what went on when this administration used government agencies to deny conservatives, Tea Party, Christians, Jews, Republicans, and any number of people that they targeted as their political enemies. They denied them their civil rights in 2012, and we do not know the extent of the effect on that election. We never will, but guess what? Barack Obama got reelected. And whether you can prove the percentage or the number or the whether you can codify, whether you can, you know, put numbers to that effort, it's not relevant. Those people should be in prison for doing that. And you got a guy, what's his name, the senator, Elijah Cummings, is he a senator or a congressman?
He's a Senator Cummings, I think he's a congressman.
Okay. He's sitting up there in these hearings doing everything he can to obstruct those hearings. And I'll tell you why. Because he received emails of information regarding taxpayers. This is alleged from the IRS, from Lois Lerner. And you know what that is, Scott? That is a class one felony. That is called
right.
A civil rights violation. And the penalty is $250,000 and 5 years for every violation. Do you know how long he should be in prison for what happened? His natural life. That's fact. So I don't blame him for trying to obstruct these hearings because he is sitting on the hot seat. And this Lois Lerner, she has already admitted to doing what she did. I mean, there's no doubt that they did it. The question is, how big is the net? And I got to tell you, I am not thrilled. Who's this guy from North Carolina?
Trey Gowdy?
What's his last? Yeah.
Yeah, Gowdy.
Guys, we should take 6 months and just put this guy, just make him dictator. Put him in charge of
I know it, huh?
For 6 months, you're dictator, and after that, you gotta step down. This guy could straighten these things out. He should be Speaker of the House. He should be a special prosecutor. He should be in charge. Because it seems like he's the only one trying to get to the bottom of it. And I'm sick of these Republicans. It's like you can almost hear it in their voice, how tepid and how but you can hear the eggshells crunching as they speak. May I say something out of school, Scott? They're a bunch of pussies. They're not going after them. Like Trey Gowdy. Boy, I watch him and I just went, man, That's my guy. And read these articles.
He,
go ahead.
He tears them up, man. And he gets his emotions going, and he gets his finger going, and he gets in their face. And, I'm with you. If we're going to have a dictator, let's give it to somebody like Trey Gowdy that's going to get to the bottom of things. Because, you know, that's what it all comes down to. And here's the thing. On the guys on the Democratic side, if I were a Democrat, Rodney, I would want them to get to the bottom of all this so that they could prove Elijah Cummings was innocent. That's what I would want. If I believed my man was innocent, I'd want them to dig in and find it. And if he's not, put him away no matter what. You know what? It really exasperates me. One of the things about politics is when the Republicans start standing up for the Republicans even when they're wrong, and the Democrats start standing up for the Democrats even when they're wrong. If these guys are corrupt, let's get them out of there. I don't care if you're a Republican. I don't care if you're a Democrat. I don't care if you're a Libertarian, a Green Party, Constitutional Party, Conservative Party. I don't care what it is. Get them out of there. And I think Trey Gowdy, boy, if we just gave him a little bit more rope, he'd be yanking a whole bunch of stuff out of there.
Yeah, I like that guy. And this idea that, it's okay. We got terrorism, so it's okay to give up a little bit of our rights. I know it's talked about a lot, and I know it's written about a lot, but let me tell you something. Where are all the cases of the TSA stopping terrorism at the airports? Where are they? Now, I can tell you where the cases are where the TSA is ripping off people's luggage. I can tell you all the cases are where the TSA is groping people, females, terrorizing kids, grandmas, people's in wheelchairs. I can tell you where those cases are. I can tell you the conspiracies where they are ripping off jewelry and computers and anything of value. I believe it was in the New York airport. I can tell you of the billions of dollars that is spent on the TSA. I can tell you about these full-body X-ray machines that have been paid for by the United States taxpayer. I can tell you who the guy is that made that sale, Michael Chernoff, who used to be, head of the TSA. Wait a minute. Maybe he was Homeland Security. Doesn't matter. The guy made the deal. He took the commission off all of that.
Right.
I can tell you all of that, but what I can't tell you, Scott, is the terrorism that they've stopped. Every single time that the FBI or some arm of law enforcement tries to sneak through a gun or a knife or some sort of weapon through security, they do it, and they get through. It's preposterous. And yet...
And it's not, if they were actually accomplishing anything, just anything, but using it for a tool, a weapon. The IRS right now, it costs 30 cents for every dollar to collect our tax money. They're not doing a good job. They're not doing an adequate job of doing their own job, yet they're being used as a tool. Obamacare, it's not accomplishing its task. We got 7 million now that are signed on to it. I think 2 of those million, the government themselves started up the sign-up process. But 6 million people have lost their health insurance. It's a tool. It's a tool to control with. And you know, Ronnie, you said something a while ago I want to throw in here on, and then I'll pass it back to you. My dad was a deputy sheriff. And I was raised the exact same way you were, to have a legitimate respect for our law enforcement. And there's a lot of law enforcement out there that risk their lives and they work hard. But we're no longer living in Adam 12. This isn't Adam 12 anymore. We've got some of our police departments are running around in tanks, and they are overstepping their bounds. And it starts there, and it goes all the way up to these things, the IRS, The EPA is doing the exact same thing. Now, the EPA is not coming down into my life and walking and knocking on my front door, but they're running around doing it to the people that have the businesses around me that I rely on for my food and for my water. Look what they've done in the southern part of the San Joaquin Valley. Look what they've done to some of the lakes in the state of California. I know they're trying to do it here in Texas, but Texas says, come and take it, you know, but they're still trying to do it. But that's what this, we're going to end up talking about this kind of a thing, I'm sure, every week, Rodney, this government overreach using everything from our local police departments all the way up to our federal agencies come in and take our rights away. And I'm tired of it. I how we got here over the last few years, I'm not quite sure, but we kind of almost woke up and realized all of a sudden this is going on.
You know, I was talking to some pilots that fly commercial airlines, big, you know, jets, big jumbo jets. And we got into a conversation about terrorism and how things have changed since post 9/11, et cetera. And they explained to me how the rules of engagement has changed. And it's very, very interesting. And one of the things is how there's no way they're going to allow the cockpit to be taken over. Because once they do that, then everybody on board is dead, including the pilots. So there's no way that's going to happen. And if it becomes obvious that the airliner is being taken over or has been taken over by force, by threat. Well, for how many years, 40 years, what has been the playbook? The playbook is, hey, do what they say, stay calm, you know, wait till the plane lands, wait till the professional negotiators there, and we'll get you back home safe. That's the rule of engagement. Well, guess what? Not anymore. You know what the rules of engagement are now, Scott? That pilot.
No, I don't.
That pilot is going to spin that plane. He's going to put it into a spin, and anybody standing up is a dead man. And anybody with their seatbelt securely fastened is going to survive. And that's what's going to happen. And then they're going to pull it out of that spin, assess the damage, assess the threat, and maybe do it again. But those terrorists are going to be put on top of that airliner, and they're going to be bounced back and forth and rolled around until they've expired or until somebody can overcome them. So,
ouch.
So this idea that the TSA is in, I don't mean, listen, anybody. Don't you think, Scott, and I'm not going to sit here and throw out a bunch of hypothetical ways I could take over a plane, but I don't need a gun or a box cutter to take over a plane, do you?
No.
I mean, and I'm not a criminal, but I certainly have an inventive mind. Give me a laptop computer, and I think everybody listening to me could pretty much connect the dots on how I could get a sharp object. I mean, those guys had nothing but box cutters. They didn't have guns. They had box cutters. I'm pretty sure I can make a box cutter out of a computer screen, and I'm it's ridiculous. It's just pointless. This entire TSA is stupid. Oh, you can only have 3 ounces of something. Well, all I need is 3 ounces of something. I got
news
for you. It's just stupid. It's a money thing. They're going to unionize those TSA guys soon enough. It's already billions of dollars. And it's preposterous. Now, I will say this. I have a lot of metal inside my body, Scott. I've got screws and pins, and I've lived a not so holy life, as they say. When I was young, a little bit rambunctious.
And I ended up with medical devices permanently in my bones. So when I go through security, especially with these stupid full-body x-ray things, they always pull me over, and I got to go early. Because they always pull me over for the body grope. And I feel like it's my right to request a female TSA person, just like a female could request a gender, you know, a certain gender. Am I right? Yes, I'm right.
That's right.
And I hearken back to a couple of few years ago when a guy infamously said, "Don't touch my junk." And it was a big deal. Don't touch my junk. And that's what I say. Listen, I am not comfortable with another guy touching my junk. So I try to make it easy on everybody. I'm not going to cause a scene. I don't have time for that. But just, you know, get me a female TSA agent. I'll do the pat-down, and I'll be on my way. Well, that's a big hassle. Well, you can't have a TSA, a female. Yes, I can. If I was a female, I could request a certain gender, and I want that same right. Well, talk. They finally give me a female to do the full-body pat-down. And Scott, being the former stand-up comic, it is impossible, Scott, impossible for me not to make a funny sound when she gets her hand in the right place. So I get more than a laugh from the other TSA agents when that happens. And the guy in charge usually doesn't find that very funny. So I try to throw him off by saying, "Could I go through the line again?" That was rather enjoyable. Well, they don't like that much either, Scott, but usually they let me go right on my way. But here's the point. It's a waste of money. They never catch anybody. And if I wanted to smuggle something through there, I'd get it through. Am I right?
You're so right. You know, it's so simple. But you know what? That's the whole dogma. That's the whole purpose. That's the whole mentality of the left. They want to sanitize you and I from every problem that we could ever have in the world. They want to make sure that government takes care of everything, that nobody has any problems, nobody does anything to them that's unhealthy, nobody does anything to them that's gonna hurt them. They want to sanitize everything. They want to legalize, they want a piece of legislation for everything that could be bad for everything. And when you start trying to fix everything, you always mess up everything. You can't fix everything. You know, it's like the environment. I'm an environmentalist, man. I'm an environmentalist through and through. I love to go to the mountains. I love to go to the high country. I love to lay out underneath the stars and look at the sky. I like to take walks, and I like to hike. I don't like to fish, but I like to watch people fish. I love the environment. And I'm a firm believer in taking care of the environment. I'm a firm believer that when you haul your trash in, pick it up and take it out with you. But I have not yet one far-left environmentalist that really actually cared about the environment. It's all they mess things up in trying to fix something. You know, it's like those guys out there in Nevada right now. They got the cows out there, and the environmentalists don't want the cows out there because they might hurt that little turtle or eat too much grass, and the turtle won't have enough grass. And so what are they doing? They're running around out there with bulldozers and giant trucks digging up the dirt, burying cows, and stealing the poor guy's cows. I don't know if you remember or not, Rodney, about is I'm going to say it had I was using it as an illustration in the pulpit in the early 90s, so it had to have happened in the 80s when they put the guy's tractor in jail because of the little mouse that was endangered on his property there in Bakersfield. In Porterville, California, we've got the mulberries, and there's this little beetle that loves the mulberries. And so they've got this mulberry patch that they grow mulberries so that they can move these mulberries and plant them when they remove some somewhere when they go to do something. Now, they tried this a couple of times, and it doesn't work. But you're driving down. If you'd ever come up to see me up in Springville, you would have driven right by this thing. And what's amazing, though, is when mulberries in bloom, you can see them. They stand out like a sore thumb. And here's this little two-acre patch of these mulberry trees that they're spending $120,000 a year to grow. And it's surrounded on the other side of the fence by mulberries as big as houses, Rodney. Big as houses for these little beetles. It's insanity because you cannot sanitize the world from all its problems. In fact, we're supposed to have problems. We're supposed to have problems because that's how we get stronger. If we don't have hurdles that we've got in our lives, we can't jump the hurdles and we can't get stronger. And that's the whole mentality of the left. It honks me off all the time because that's what they want to do. They want, when you get on that airplane, they're going to find a way, government's going to find a way to make sure there's never, ever another problem. And the harder they work, we still have problems. Now, they're down here in Fort Hood and on our military bases. They've taken all the guns away from the boys that we have signed up to learn how to take and use a gun, and so that nobody gets shot. And what happens? Now we got people getting shot because they're trying to sanitize the world from its problems. The guy that obviously, the guy's got a gun, obviously taking the guns away from everybody else didn't solve that problem. But it's a mentality that goes through everything that they do. When it comes to everything, every one of those stupid legislative bills that they've written in the last 60, 70 years in Washington, D.C., and in our state houses that the left has put through with the EPA and all of these other groups, they're trying to sanitize life from every single problem. Bloomberg has been the king of it when he was the mayor, trying to sanitize everybody from soda and salt and sugar. Well, yeah, I know. You and I, Rodney, we were talking just yesterday about dieting and eating too much. I know sometimes I eat too much, and I know sometimes I eat too much sugar. But you know what? I don't need the government coming in and trying to sanitize my life and take everything away from me and giving me back my green beans so that I eat right.
When you were doing all this environmental work, was this before or after you were running guns and Central America? I'm curious, Scott.
Well, that's why I was running guns down in South America.
Right,
I was chasing down the anti-environmentalists.
I am. I'm building a profile and a file on you as we speak. Speaking of which, there's a story out that our friend Kathleen Sebelius, the Health and Human Services Secretary, is resigning, and I would like to be the first to congratulate her on a job well done, Scott. Kind of a stormy 5-year tenure on the part of Ms. Sebelius, but wow, what an achievement! She's absolutely brilliantly rolled out Obamacare, and when I say brilliantly rolled it out, I absolutely mean it. And why? What do I mean by that? Well, listen. Obamacare was designed to fail. Obamacare was never about health. It was never about insurance. And it was never about covering everybody with health insurance. Never. It was not designed for that. It was designed for failure. And Ms. Sebelius successfully rolled it out to absolutely obfuscate and hide that fact. If that website, for instance, that website costs what, $500 billion or something? I'm not sure how much it costs, but I guess it costs 10 times what the website for eBay costs. If that website, for instance, Scott, would have worked, imagine. When did that thing come out? Well, it came out before the 2012 election, did it not? If it would have worked, and people en masse, if millions and millions of people could have logged on successfully and found out that their premiums were in fact going up, their benefits were going down, their coverage was going to get worse, and their deductibles were going to triple and quadruple, and it was going to be crappier health care
for more money. If that website would have worked, Scott, there is no way Obama would have got reelected. Kathleen Sebelius made sure that didn't happen. When Obamacare, when it became completely obvious to some people that it was a total scam, she kind of dragged this thing out and gave the heads up to the people in charge to change some of it, to drag out some of this mandate stuff and, well, you know, we're tweaking the website and, oh, millions of people. And then right before the deadline, Scott, just as you alluded to a couple seconds ago, they started signing up people for people without even telling them. And they zipped up from 5 million to 7 million subscribers in a couple of weeks, right under the deadline, so Obama could do a victory lap, genius, of Kathleen Sebelius. I think a round of applause here. I think she should get a golden parachute and a Band-Aid for that eye, at least. She's a genius. And if anybody should get the award for Marxism, it's Kathleen Sebelius, and that's what I got to say about her.
Well, I'm just glad to see her go. But you know what? You're exactly. I mean, I think you're spot on. They knew that they didn't want this thing to take an effect as quickly as it could. If all this had come out before that election, all this had come out in the summer of 2012, like it should have, and it would have if the mainstream media had been doing its job. But if it had, he would have been toast. I don't think, you know, you get to a certain point where you can't cheat your way. You can't cheat enough to win, and I think you would have been at that point.
You know, there's still never been a mainstream story about the fact that they overpaid for this website by, you know, hundreds of times over, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, and that it went to a Canadian company, partly owned by relatives of what's her name, the aide to Barack Obama. What's her name? Oh, I'm bad with names. You know, the Iranian-born.
Valerie Jarrett.
Valerie Jarrett. I want to say it was her son-in-law that was either employed by that company or part owner or something. There was a whole money connection with that Canadian company that made the incredibly bad, inoperable website. And have you read that anywhere? I mean, you really got to search that thing out. It's unbelievable. What else have you got? I've got some other stuff in the news that I can bring. You want to keep talking about the news? Because it's really interesting. Some of the things that have happened just today. I read a story.
Oh, I know. Well, you know what? One that you mentioned earlier I think we could talk about for a second, which is kind of hilarious, is Colbert taking over for Letterman. I've always had a high respect for Jay Leno. And I have to say I didn't like Jay Leno at first because I was a huge Johnny Carson fan. And there was nobody was going to replace Johnny Carson. I was in junior. In fact, I was young. I was in early high school when Johnny Carson retired, and I just didn't like Jay Leno because he wasn't going to be Johnny Carson. But Jay Leno filled those shoes, and he rocked. He was awesome, and you would think that they would find somebody to replace Letterman that they could at least try and stand in his shoes. And I've never respected Letterman as far as his positions. I've never really even cared for his personality. But I have to give him a 100% A on his ability at doing his job. He was good at what he did. And a lot of people liked him. He held up his numbers like he needed to for a long time, and he was a hard worker, so I have to give him that. But what is with Colbert taking over the Letterman show?
That's unbelievable. I mean, you got a guy, first of all, that isn't even himself. What he does for the Colbert Report is an act, is a parody. Now, it's a really good parody, and when I say good, I mean it's a good act. I don't watch it, and I don't, you know, I'm not a fan, but who cares? I mean, the guy has been mega successful. But let's be honest about what it is. It's not real. It's not a guy like John Stewart or Craig Ferguson or Jay Leno or any of the people you mentioned where they are themselves and they come out and they entertain, they interview people. Gobert comes out and he's a character. He plays a phony Republican. It is a parody of Bill O'Reilly, and it always has been. And they're going to hire him to replace Letterman? Now, I have read since then that he won't be doing that character, because obviously Comedy Central owns that show, and I'm sure that he doesn't have the right, or maybe he does, who knows. Contractually, I don't know where it stands, but it makes sense that he's not going to be doing that act. But still, on what basis are they hiring? And I also read another article where Letterman really respects the guy and it seemed really sincere what Letterman said about the hire and that he was really a big fan of Colbert. But here's a guy, Colbert, that has made his entire career, the totality of his career, mocking conservatives and Republicans, mocking them, not just making jokes about them and, you know, doing what Seth Meyers does and what Jon Stewart does and what, any 98% of comedians do, not just making fun of conservatives or slanting their humor, not just that, but deriding and mocking and, you know, that's his thing. It's not a slant. It is 100% the other way. And he's going to take over late night for CBS? Tell me that's not politically motivated. Tell me it's not. Somebody stand up and say that's not a political play. And let's jump over to NBC. They've fired Jay Leno. Now, how many conservatives do you got operating a late night show? I mean, you could make a case that Jimmy Kimmel's kind of conservative, but, you know, just kind of, you know, once in a while, you know, the drag kicking and screaming to make a joke about Obamacare, but boy, that's pretty low-hanging fruit. And you got Jay Leno. Now, I'm going to disagree with you on Jay Leno insofar as I don't like him like you do. I don't find him entertaining at all. But he did do a great share of conservative, if you want to call them conservative jokes. I'll just say that he was equal treatment for Obama than he was for George Bush, like Johnny Carson.
Right.
Johnny Carson was invited to play tennis with George Bush the Elder at the White House, and he said no. He said, I'm not coming to the White House because I got to go out and make fun of you tomorrow night. And that's what kind of guy Johnny Carson was. Now compare that to Jimmy Fallon, who would go to the White House and spend the rest of his life there if invited. People have no shame. They have no sense of what's right. They have no philosophy of, I don't even know what I'm trying to say here. My point is this. Johnny Carson felt it more important to his audience to not let his audience know that he was a Republican. Did you know he was a Republican? I didn't. Now, after he retired, you know, he would, you know, give interviews and talk about it. But before that, you didn't. And, you know, Walter Cronkite the same way. For many, many years, he didn't know what a hardcore left-winger he was when he was doing the news, because he had something called, help me with a word here, Scott.
Integrity.
That's right. But look at these guys. Jay Leno bags on Obama, you know, pretty good. But Obama's president. That's what you're supposed to do.
That's right.
And what does NBC do? NBC fires Jay Leno. And make no mistake, folks, Jay Leno was fired. Jay Leno wants to do The Tonight Show tonight.
That's right.
Okay. End of story. You're hearing it from me. It's the truth. Jay Leno was fired by NBC. And Jay Leno was getting the highest ratings he's ever got in his career when he was fired. Now, why the hell would NBC do that, you ask, Scott Osborne? Well, I'll tell you. because NBC wants to be in business with the Obama administration, because Comcast is trying to merge with Time Warner and become the biggest cable company in the history of cable companies. They're clearly looking for government approval of a merger that clearly violates the monopoly laws of this country. It's just so obvious. And, of course, the news arm of NBC is MSNBC. I don't think we have to spend too much time talking about where they stand editorially 24/7. Tune into the Ed Show sometime. It is corrupt at the highest levels, and it's even seeping into the stupid late-night monologues. And now CBS, I guess because they want to, what? They want to compete with Jimmy Fallon. And oh, guess who follows Jimmy Fallon, Scott? Seth Meyers, one of the hardest core left-wingers you could have picked. This guy foams at the mouth left-wing. He makes Rachel Maddow look like, well, Rachel Maddow. And they got him following Jimmy Fallon. Now, I happen to like Jimmy Fallon. I think he's hysterical. But compare him to Johnny Carson, Scott. My word.
No comparison.
I mean, no offense to Jimmy. Again, I like Jimmy Fallon. He makes me laugh. I actually watch The Tonight Show now. Because, again, you and I just disagree on taste with Jay Leno. I never liked Jay, and I don't like him now. So I haven't watched The Tonight Show in years. But I watch it now because Jimmy Fallon makes me chuckle. And I can't watch Letterman anymore because it makes me so sad. He used to be my hero. But do you think I'm going to tune in to Colbert? Don't we know his agenda?
Well, and I got a question, and this is your realm. Your comedy's your realm. Do you really think if you Colbert, what he's been doing now, it works. Obviously, he's got his following. He's made it big doing what he's doing. If he takes that facade off and steps into another chair, and the people tune in, and it's no longer the Colbert that they're used to seeing and they're expecting, do you really think it's going to work? Or do you think in a year we're going to be having the news is going to be about the ratings falling out of the bottom?
They only want this for the 2014 election. They will regroup at the end of this year.
That makes sense.
Makes
a lot of sense.
They could easily keep him through the 2016 election, but he's not long-term. He's not. How long was Letterman at CBS, 23 years, 21 years?
Oh, yeah.
Whatever it was. You think Colbert is going to be there longer than 5 years? Forget about it. Unless there's a miracle, which there's not going to be. I've been wrong many times in my life. I'm wrong more than I am right. I will grant you that. I'll eat my hat if Colbert is there after Hillary is elected. That's right, I said it. I did a little Mark Levin there. Republicans don't stand a chance in 2016, Scott. They don't stand a chance.
No, they don't. Well, I'll tell you what your buddy Rush says. He says
what?
CBS is declaring war on the heartland of America. So I think you and Rush are spot on. He talked about that today. And I really don't watch a lot of late night television. In fact, I'll tell you, I never really watched a lot of Jay Leno. I used to watch The Tonight Show. I'll tell you, though, when I became to respect Jay Leno was when I went to see the show live, and I'd sit there and watch Jay Leno. I'd watch them tell us about his day, and then I'd watch him come out and warm the audience up. And that was what I liked. I've never been a late night kind of TV person. I just don't. I'm generally doing something late at night, and if I'm going to watch something, I want kind of a movie. So all of these guys, really, they're not going to get my participation anyway, because it's basically not my thing.
You're generally doing something late at night. We want to know what it is.
What am I doing late at night? Well, sometimes I'm posting.
Please excuse. We don't want any phoniness. We know you ran guns in the 80s in Nicaragua, and we want to know what you're doing late at night now.
Well, actually, in between my Facebook postings, what I'm working on real hard right now is becoming a cattle baron and an oil baron. I've decided that I'm going to be the next J.R. Ewing. And I've been watching Dallas, the 2012 Dallas. I've been getting the discs for the old Dallas, and I've been watching and I've been learning from J.R., on how to finagle this all the way through, and I'm going to become a cattle baron and an oil baron in my old age.
Folks, you heard it here first. Scott Osborne is masterminding a worldwide beef conspiracy. Okay, continue
That's right.
your story. Sorry for that interruption.
No, I was pretty much done with it, but I just thought that was interesting. CBS declares war on the heartland of America. From Rush Limbaugh. But you know what? One other big thing that's going on, Rodney, that's huge right now. The mainstream media isn't covering a lot, but the Drudge Report's been covering it, and that, of course, is 33 million people a day see that, and its social media's picked it up. Jan Morgan Media, you want to talk about a beautiful lady that carries a gun, Jan Morgan's picked it up. But this thing going on down there in Nevada with Mr. and Mrs. Bundy and their cattle. And you know the feds and the state are taking a stand there, and I really think that this thing have you watched what's been going on down there the last couple of days?
Yeah, I have, and also he was on Hannity last night. I thought Hannity did
right.
a really bad job with it, though. They should have had a producer over there, kind of staging things, because the guy didn't come off that well. He came off as kind of a I don't know. It just I've got a lot of sympathy for him, and I was going to drive out there myself, but I ended up not being able to. But it's just really unbelievable that, first of all, they broke out the tasers and the dogs, and you know it's only a matter of time before somebody really gets hurt out there. And
oh yeah,
it's BS. And now there's a story that I have got from my sources, which are always good sources. That the reason this has been going on for 25 years, this beef,
right.
no pun intended, between him and the federal authorities, the reason it's escalated lately is because the Obama administration has given a gigantic construction contract to guess what? A solar company to build a big solar plant on that land. So the plot thickens.
Oh, well, that's going to be real good for the little turtle.
You'll fry
Insane.
Those little turtles. Fry those little
what,
tortoises yeah. with the solar, you know, lasers coming off the parabolic mirrors. I can't wait.
Well, you know, what I don't understand about the mainstream media on this one is this story's got legs. This story's got legs. Now, I don't know about the beef between him and his cows and the land. I mean, that's a 20-year-old, 25-year-old thing that's been going on for a long time. And I'm a firm believer in obeying the laws of the land. And at the same time, I believe we've got a lot of government overreach. But I think the big story in this, and I think the one that every single patriot in the country needs to be sharing, is this little orange fence fencing off the First Amendment area. And I'll tell you, I there's a guy up there in Nevada running for governor, and I was going to reach out to him today. I can't even remember his name. I'd have to look it up on Facebook. But I'm going to tell you, if that guy running for governor, or if the governor of Nevada would take the cameras, go down, pick that fence up, and take it and throw it in the garbage can and look straight towards Washington and straight into that camera and say, you will not come in here and decide where our First Amendment rights are, I guarantee you what the story would be the next day is all the people yelling for him to be president or to run for president in 2016.
Yeah. You're talking about, That would be good. That would be good. I would like to see the Nevada National Guard be called up. That would be interesting.
It sure would. Because I'll tell you, they could make this, that this needs to be the standoff between the state and the federal government. Because I'll tell you, that Bureau of Land Management, most people don't know about it. In fact, I would imagine if I walked up and down my neighborhood and knocked on doors and said, do you know what the Bureau of Federal Land Management is? They probably wouldn't have a clue.
I know.
But they're in the process right now of trying to take some land from Texas and give it to Oklahoma. I got a guy here in Texas that owns some land. Yeah, I'll have to send you the link. They're doing that while everybody's paying attention to their fiasco they've got going on out there in Nevada. And it's just another example of the federal government marching in where they don't belong. It really honks me off. I'll tell you why. Because I feel for those founding fathers in 1787 that sat in that hot room. They didn't have air conditioning. The doors were all locked up. The windows were all locked up. They were in there for 2 months. They sat there and argued for 2 months trying to knock out this Constitution. And the Constitution had one purpose, and one purpose only. And that was to say, all right, federal government, you've got these particular places where you've got jurisdiction, and everything else belongs to the states. And, man, those guys, John Adams, what did it take him, 2 weeks to get up there? He had enough time traveling up to Philadelphia in the summer of 1787 to write a whole diary about his experiences. And they worked so hard on this Constitution, and it's being trampled on right and left. And the states need to be the ones to stand up to the federal government. Our governors, our state senators, our state representatives need to be standing up and saying, no, get your nose out of here. Now, I think it's going on in a lot of places. We've got some places, some states, and I couldn't just list them off the top of my head, but that in the last year have passed some of those state laws that the federal government just, if you want to push some Second Amendment rights on us, you're just out to luck because our law enforcement isn't going to be able to stand by it. And there's some fights like that going on. But I think that's where we win this, Rodney, this insanity of the federal overreach. We know that the federal government cannot micromanage, number one. And number two, they don't have a right to do that. And I think our states, our states don't start standing up and standing up for our rights for us, and I think that's what Nevada needs to do. I'm all with you. I think the governor needs to call up that National Guard, send it right down there, and tell those feds, you get out of my state, you go back into Washington, D.C., you stay out of here, you're not going to limit the First Amendment rights of our people here in the state of Nevada. We're the state of Nevada, and we're sovereign. We've got the Constitution backing us up. And I think that would make a difference. I'll tell you, I guarantee you, I know grassroots. I know the grassroots people well. I got a lot of friends that are in the grassroots. And I guarantee you, if they had we watched a video tomorrow of any governor on either side walking down there picking up that fence and chucking it in a big old dumpster and giving it right back and telling the federal government, you can just take your little orange fence and just go haul yourselves out of here. It'd be like the Ben Carson thing. You know, Ben Carson turned around and told the president off, basically, and what'd they do the next day, everybody wanted him to run for president. I think there's a politician up there in Nevada missing out.
I'll tell you what would happen if Scott Osborne showed up at the Federal Bureau of Land Management. The guy would answer the door and say, hey, that gun runner from El Salvador is here. You better, we better watch our P's and Q's. That's what would happen. That would back those guys down right there. There's another story. I got a sad story that I'm sad to report here, buddy. Not happy at all to report this at all. And I'm not being sarcastic for once in my life. There is a really, really sad story about Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron, a guy people that you they're the same age, around the age of you and I, were sports fans. If you're somewhere around the age, somewhere between 40 and 70 years old, you grew up, you watched Hank Aaron
do one of the most courageous things in the history of sports, in the history of the country. He's right up there with Rosa Parks, with Jackie Robinson, with Martin Luther King. He's up there, man. He made, well, you know, he made a run at Babe Ruth's home run record. Now, it may not sound like Rosa Parks, and maybe it's not on par with those civil rights people, and maybe I made a illogical comparison there, but, you know, I wasn't around. I wasn't old enough for Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King, but I watched Hank Aaron, and Hank Aaron was going to beat a white man's record that stood for 40-some-odd years, longer than that maybe, 70 years. I'm not sure how long. I don't do math. And Hank Aaron, obviously, black guy. Hank Aaron looked to me like a guy that could maybe hit a one bouncer off the wall if the wind was blown out. But he would get up there and just jack the ball out of there with the sweetest, most fluid athleticism. It's a beautiful thing. He wasn't like Mickey Mantle or Dave Kingman or some of these guys that would get up there and just gorilla the ball out of the park. You know what I mean? The big killabrews of the game. Rocky Calavito, they'd get up there and they just would gorilla the ball out of there. No, Hank Aaron had technique. He would corkscrew that bat around, perfect timing, perfect swing. When he could swing that bat and his feet would be in the same place as when he started that swing, it was perfect. He wouldn't be falling down or, you know, collapsing backwards out of the batter's box. He could jack that ball. And he was making a run at Babe Ruth, the legend. White guy. Now, why am I saying that? Well, because it's important to the story. It shouldn't be, but it was. And Hank Aaron started getting death threats from these idiots. But most people were for Hank Aaron. And Hank Aaron got up close to that record, and he went through there was a strike one year, and it shortened the season, and then it kind of threw him off, and then he got up to where he was going to, clearly, he was going to beat this record, 714 lifetime home runs. And he got up at the end of the season, and, I mean, there's people that are threatening to shoot him from the stand, sending them letters. If you break the record, I will shoot you as you round the bases. Can you imagine the pressure? I mean, he doesn't know. And this is back before the TSA, who probably couldn't have stopped it anyway. Imagine the pressure. Every time you walk out of the dugout, you're walking toward home plate. You're trying to play baseball. It takes a lot of focus to hit a little baseball. And you got to think, is some guy out there about to shoot me? Because it's very credible. So he's out there, and he's jacking the ball out of the park like he normally does. People are going nuts. And he gets to the end of the season, Scott, and guess what? He's one short. Hmm. Now, for most people, or for white people, I should say, or maybe even Hispanic, or I don't know, that wouldn't be a big deal. It was, wait till next year. It'll give us that'll give us some time to throw a big party and plan things. And, hell, like you can go on an autograph tour and give a whole bunch of things, blah, blah, blah. It might even be a good thing. But it wasn't a good thing for Hank Aaron, Scott. It was a bad thing. Why? Because now he has to endure this kind of pressure for the entire offseason. It is a living hell for Hank Aaron, his teammates, the league, and mostly his family. So they start the next season on the road, which is extra dangerous, right?
because they got, you know, somewhat security in Atlanta where he plays the home games. But on the road, it's not as accommodating. And they start, so the manager says, you know what? There's two reasons why you're not going to play in this the opening series this year. Number one, it's dangerous. Number two, of course, we don't want you to break the record out of town. We want that to happen in Atlanta for all the obvious reasons. Well, guess what, Scott? The goofy commissioner steps in and says, no, sorry, we are not, the league is not going to allow you the right to set your own lineup card. Not going to do it. You are going to put Hank Aaron into the lineup. And Mr. Hank Aaron, we better not catch you striking out on purpose. You're going to go up there and take your cuts. Well, Hank Aaron is an honorable man. He's not going to go up there and, you know, try to not hit a home run. He's not going to do that. He's not going to screw people out of an honest at-bat. So he goes up there. They're forcing him to play. Can you imagine that? They forced black people to not play. You got to be in the Negro Leagues. You can't be in the major leagues. First they force him not to play. Now they're forcing Hank Aaron, you got to play. So he's up there in some out-of-town stadium. Sure enough, he jacks one out of the park. Place goes nuts, right? In the very first at-bat, he ties the record. He goes nuts. Well, he doesn't get any more home runs for the rest of the series. And it's clear that he's trying to. So they go back to Atlanta, and he breaks the record. Bill Buckner jumps up in the outfield and almost catches the ball. It just barely goes over his glove. He jumps up over the fence, just barely misses it. But a relief pitcher who's out there beyond warming up catches the ball and breaks the record. These two white guys, I don't know if you remember watching this, but two white guys jump out of the stands, Scott, and they run onto the field, and they catch Hank Aaron as he's rounding second base. Do you remember this?
No, I don't watch. I don't watch football.
Well, it's okay. Hank Aaron doesn't watch gun running, so you guys are even. So he's rounding second base, and these two white guys catch him. Can you imagine? I mean, I'm not being racist, but Hank Aaron must have turned white as he's running second base, as these white guys are literally running at him. He's like, oh, my God, this is the end. Well, they're just there to congratulate him. And it's a famous, famous video. And if you go on YouTube, you can watch it. You can see the look on Hank Aaron's face like, holy crap, I'm about to die. But they run with him, and they're patting him on the back and whatnot. And he breaks the record. Well, cut to 40 years later. Scott, this week, it's 40 years later. Hank Aaron gives an interview to USA Today. And it's entitled, Hank Aaron's Grace, Still a Beauty to Behold. Hank Aaron's Grace, Still a Beauty to Behold. USA Today, 40th anniversary of number 715. And you know what Hank Aaron says, Scott? Do you know what he says? I'm going to tell you what Hank Aaron says in the interview on his 40th anniversary of breaking that record. He says, sure, this country has a black president. But when you look at a black president, President Obama is left with his foot stuck in the mud from all of the Republicans with the way he's treated. We've moved in the right direction, and there have been improvements, but we still have a long ways to go in the country. The big difference is that back then they had hoods. Now they have neckties and starched shirts." Unquote. Scott, Hank Aaron chose the 40th anniversary of hitting number 715 to say Republicans are their modern-day KKK. They used to wear hoods. Now they have neckties and starched shirts. I got to tell you, my friend, I don't know who was more disappointed, me or the rest of the world, but I think it was me.
You know,
he didn't cheat like Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, and Barry Bonds. Those guys are traitors. And Hank Aaron had 3 gold gloves. He didn't just play offense. And he would jack the ball out of the park, and he gave hope to scrawny kids like me. But he lost me on that one. You know what I'm saying?
I know. And you know what? I think it's so sad because silence is golden. Silence is golden. Why in your last years when you've got such – I mean, I like I say, I don't watch football. I don't pay attention to sports, but even I knew who Hank Aaron was, and I knew he was great. And then now he stained himself with a huge portion of the American people in his last years. And you know, when he dies and they have his funeral, this is what the news media is going to be talking about. They're not going to be talking about his record. They will to a bit, but what are the news media going to want to love to dig up is this right here. And you know, I'm almost of the thought of somebody that had to be that great. Did somebody just put those words in his mouth?
Yes, they had to be. You know, he says that, you know, we used to wear hoods and now we wear neckties, meaning Republicans. And forget that the KKK, Jim Crow, segregation, and slavery, those are all Democrat institutions, by the way. Okay, but let's forget that for a minute. I'm like you. I want to get to the core of it. What else is going through his dugout, you know?
Right. Exactly.
Another thing that I found telling, and I'm not, well, I was about to say I'm not a psychologist, but I am, actually. He says later in the interview, Hank Aaron, that is, he kept all of these hate-filled, racist letters that he received, some of them with blatant death threats, some of them with direct, I am going to kill you, death threats that he received while he was making this Babe Ruth's record. He kept them all these years. And my question to you, Hammer and Hank, did they sign those letters with their party affiliation? Because I got news for you. Bull Connor was a Democrat, so was George Wallace, Robert Byrd, and Lyndon, I'll have those niggers voting Democrat for the next 200 years, Johnson, okay? Not Republicans. Shame on you, and shame on the USA Today, where Hank gave these ignorant views. And we can give him a pass. That's okay. I'll give him a pass because he's old, and someone put those ideas in his head, and maybe he's heard talking points one too many times. But USA Today, their headline was, "Hank Aaron's grace, still a beauty to behold. Scott, where is the grace in those words?
There is none. There absolutely is none, you know, Rodney. And it really, that's why it always saddens me when somebody that really shouldn't stick their nose in politics sticks their nose in politics on both sides. I don't like it, man. Some of our more well-respected people in different areas decide that they're just going to make some political digs. Now, I believe everybody should have the right to get up and say whatever they want, but I think sometimes it's just you do so much damage to yourself on no matter what side. And now we've got a special part of the program. Rodney, you remember there used to be a show on television called It's Your Life. and they brought somebody in from your past. Well, we got somebody that is called in from your past, Rodney. And this person, this person has got some wonderful things to say to you. You know, this person you've had a lot of conversations with, and this person supported you through thick and through thin at different times. In fact, I think you guys go way back into kindergarten. I think you went to kindergarten together. Just kidding.
Really?
We got a call in from my good friend from Alabama, Jennifer Montrose. Jennifer, hey, girl. Well,
she's
supposed to be there.
Scott?
I don't think. Oh, there she is.
Yeah?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Wonderful. You know, talking about history, go to the Democratic website, they stake a claim. They say that for more than 200 years, our party has led this fight for civil rights, health care, Social Security, workers' rights, and women's rights. We are the party of Barack Obama, John F. Kennedy, FDR, and countless everyday Americans who work each day to build a more perfect union, and they list a bunch of their accomplishments. You know, the last I remember, 200 years ago, it was 1814, and they were still fighting for the right to keep slavery alive. So they have gotten so caught up in their own, you know, disillusionment that they feel like in their ego that they can put a blatant lie on their own website. And we have low information voters who believe it just because certain people say it. And I want to say my hat's off to Rodney and his new show tonight. I think this is great. You know, and there's just more to come. I'm looking forward to Thursday night show each week and what's going to be to come, the guests that you're going to have on, and there's things. I know that this 2014 election cycle is important, and we need to do our part to set the record straight. The Republican Party is not what it used to be. The party of that was around during Frederick Douglass is not here anymore. We're working to get it back. And I know that my latest pet peeve is what's been happening to our military servicemen and women, not getting their just due on their benefits and various things. I have a dear friend of mine who was at the recent incident in Fort Hood, and she shares with me some of the reality of what she saw, which at this moment I've been asked, you know, not to say anything until she's ready to come out and talk about it. But all I can say is, you know, that a majority of what you see on television, just know that there's another side to the story. And that I can say. But, you know, Rodney, my hat's off to you. This is great. You know, I think great things are coming your way for 2016. I look forward to seeing what you have between now and then. And with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Rodney.
It's great to hear from you, Jennifer. I love you. And you should call in earlier so we can talk to you longer. What do you – you waited until the last, like, couple of minutes of the show. We need to hear
she's
more
actually
you.
She's been there and actually been unmuted since the very beginning of the show, but she wanted to wait until later. She's been listening this whole time, and we've been chatting a little bit back and forth, and I keep saying ready and ready, and then I said ready, and then she got a thumbs up, so it was time to bring her on. She mainly wanted to listen, and things were going
well. Thanks, Jennifer. It's very kind of you. You're awesome. Love you.
You're welcome.
And I don't know how to wrap up the show, Scott, but it should be something special. Do you have some sort of discount on machine guns this week going?
Well, and I can't believe it's already 2 hours. That's the way it goes. We have so much fun. We do have a couple of announcements that we can wrap up with. Number one, I want to say great show, Rodney. I love the conversation tonight. We're going to have a lot of fun with this over time. I've grown. You're a good friend of mine. A few months back, you were just somebody that I knew and was gaining respect for. But we talk a lot on the phone, and we've had some good conversations, and you've become what I consider a good friend. And I am looking forward to, as we go throughout the year, the things that we can discuss, the people that we can have on the show, and just have a great time. That's what Blog Talk's all about. Take a little lighter fun with sometimes, and sometimes, you know, very, very serious some of these matters. We are not going to have Ladies Bible Class tomorrow on Contending for Truth Radio. I will be leaving about 10 o'clock in the morning with my good friend Michael Smith from Conservative Nation Radio. Contending for Truth Radio, we're out of Dallas. Conservative Nation Radio, it's over there, that other city over there that we're supposed to be feuding, I guess, Fort Worth. Michael Smith and I are going to be heading down to Corsicana to the I Do Not Consent rally, and are we going to have a good time? Jennifer, going to get to meet Pastor Stephen Broden tomorrow, or Saturday, which I'm looking forward to, and some other great patriots that I've made friends with here in Texas, and really a lot of them, you know, just communicate on Facebook. I'm going to finally get to shake some hands. I'll be wearing my boots and my belt. We're still working on a hat, and I'm just going to have a great time. Love this stuff that goes on here in Texas. California, Rodney, you know, I love California. I was born and raised there, but I'll tell you, politics in Texas is a whole lot more fun. And then Jennifer Montrose talking to us here at the end of the show on Tuesday, folks. We've got Parental Sovereignty Radio, and we got a special guest, Tom, and I can't even pronounce his last name, Jennifer. Villagrenet, I'll have to get down where I can pronounce that. Coming on Tuesday, special guest, running for Congress down there in Alabama, with me and Jennifer and Dan Wilson from Florida on that show, of course. And then we'll be right back. Don't want to forget Saturday's show. Saturday, I'll be broadcasting from the rally, Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson. Dan's going to be having a guest, Bob Struble, who we've had on before, a historian and a writer and just an incredible guy. I'll be operating the studio on my phone and letting them do most of the talking because I'll be at the rally. But we'll be doing that at 11 o'clock Texas time. And then, of course, Parental Sovereignty Radio is at 7 o'clock on 7 o'clock California time and 9 o'clock Texas time on Tuesday. And then, of course, right back around the next Thursday, and Rodney and I'll be back on for this great new show that I'm going to love. I'm gonna really enjoy that, and I just have to agree with you 100%, Jennifer Montrose, as we are doing this show each week. So with that, we want to say goodbye to everybody. We're going to kick it off with Keep On Keeping On, D-Rock Country, great patriot, great music. We love his music, and this just says it all. What Jennifer and I do, what Rodney does, what Dan does, and all of the other patriots. Keep on keeping on.
That just go wrong, make you wanna holler and shout and throw your hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And you think that things can get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes south. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace is gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. Keep on keeping on.
if it ever gets too tough, just remember your faith. Well, I'll always see you through it. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. There's one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I beg you one better time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside.
Oh, yeah, that's the same picture that I got, but from the side view. Right. Yeah, Drudge, they messed that up somehow. Oh, she looks awful. See, I've been thinking that she's not really going to run. And Dick Morris keeps saying she's not going to run. I think she's just raising money. Well, I don't know. He's right half the time. Yeah. He's right about the underbelly of politics. Not always right at the predictions. But generally, when... No, not just his, not his predictions, but the underbelly of how politics works. But when it comes to the Clintons, he's generally pretty on. But I just think there's so many pictures. She's been running around, and of course, Secretary of State, that job is a jeans and a tennis shoe job. But there's just so many pictures of her looking so crappy. And I've just always thought, if she really wanted to be president, they're smart. The Clintons are smart. She wouldn't be letting them take all those pictures of her with it. There for a while, it didn't even look like she was combing her hair, you know? And then this one. I mean, this one's going to be an award winner, man. They're going to be... I might... No, I was really happy with that. I think we had fun. I think it flowed well. We had good stories. Of course, today we had some really good stories to talk about.
turned off the phone.